The other one doesn't have, the other one does. And there are many, many other things too, like sex. The man has the speed and the desire, and it's over. And he can go and watch television. You can argue all day, and the man can go to bed and he wants to have his wife, and she's on the other side of the bed, or she's out waiting till he falls asleep. Or better yet, she says, "You sleep on the cot." He doesn't understand that. So they had an argument. So what? So they didn't finish the argument. So what? He wants sex. And she's not made that way. Because sex to her is the whole continuing act of affection. And if there were men here, I would tell them this, if they don't know it. I would tell them this about a woman. Because a man has such, they say, 7 times stronger than the woman. Sometimes it's 70 times stronger with a man. I think I would tell a man, you just can't turn your wife on basically by going to bed and pulling her over and kissing her and wanting to enter her, because there's just too many things. She's tired. She's had the children under her all day. She's cooked. Her mind was on a million things. But what do you do then? Well, then you give her charm. You do it her way. Well, my way is just to go to bed and... No, huh? That's right. That's the man's way. Speed and quickness and he's ready. Not her. And I say you use charm. And don't think I haven't told many men that. I have countless if they would do it. Come home and kiss her, and then touch her. Tell her how nice she looks. I told my wife tonight what a beautiful hairdo she had. She looked very, very nice. I told her. Then I say during the rest of the evening, come over and squeeze her a little. You're beginning to turn her, this whole affection, into love, and she'll be ready for you. But if you don't understand your woman the way she is, you're going to get turned off. But you've got to understand a man too, and when he hasn't come that way with his charm and his whole affection as a continuing part of the act of love, you got to say, okay. You got to understand that he's not that way. You got to reach the right compromise on those things. That's identity. Allow for differences and understand them and try to make changes where it's necessary. But when you can't make the changes, honor and love and cherish and obey. One more, ladies. One more. There's a list of them. I find these to be the greatest. And that last one, is this number 7? Okay. And it's just where we're at. I always take it last because basically I'm always a little shy. That's right. And basically because it's the best. And that's love, sexual love. Oh my, the communications that are broken, the inability to express because we don't really understand. Not only the identity of a woman and a man in this, but at least in my day and time, it was so hush-hush that you didn't talk about it, that it was nasty and it was filthy. I did something the other day for a course I'm teaching in counseling. I did something that I would never do, but under those circumstances, I did. But before I did, I told my wife. Now, mind you, though I'm a little shy on that subject, I'm well-informed. And though I'm a little shy, I was brought up by a dad who then was ungodly and is Luther now, who showed me what it was, gonorrhea and syphilis. And I knew about drugs when I was 5 years old, and that was in 1930, long before you were ever conceived, at least 99% of you here. I have seen people with these diseases, and I have seen drugs. It was called snow, basically, then. I know what homosexuality is. When I was placed on a gunboat of 56 men in World War II, and they said to one 17-year-old Billy, we're going to break you, and excuse the words, ladies, but I'm going to use them. They said to me, and I was shocked then, and it still bothers me, you're going to be screwed, tattooed, and stewed. And for 3 years they tried to break me, and I suppose they could have broken me a million times, but you can't break somebody when God's inside. And I won, or he won. And I guess that always helps a man too to counsel somebody when you can tell them that you don't have to fall down to these things that maybe we wanted to do. We didn't only want to conquer because there were 56 against one on a little gunboat in a war, but we wanted to conquer because we knew we wanted to be married and we wanted to have children, and above all, we wanted to serve God. You don't have to fall. So I know a lot about homosexuals. The only friend I had was a homosexual. He's now a priest. Yes, a homosexual priest. He's the only friend I had. Well, one night, again, in the Philippines, when everybody took the flour and all the cans of goods and went to the shore, they were swapping that for love with Filipino women. And the officers didn't care. The only thing that riled them was that I wouldn't go. We were given, I don't know what it was, It was called a pro kit. I wonder if they still do this in the service. You know, you don't forget some things. You live them and you relive them and you never forget them. And thank God you don't, because I've had four boys that have told and a daughter. And all five have been virgins and are, excepting the two married. Of course, they're living in love with their husband or their wife. But they gave us then, in 1946, that's 30 years ago. This was the government then. And by the way, I'm a flag waver. And I'm proud of this country. I think it's the greatest, but I know it's corruptness too, like in myself or in you, it exists. But my government gave each of us a pro kit 30 years ago, and they said, here, in any city you're in, as a United States sailor, you go to any, expression was cat house, house of prostitution, whorehouse, and you do whatever you want, but after you've committed the act, you use the pro kit. I don't know what it was. I assume it was some kind of salve or something to place within the penis. I don't know what it was. But the thing was, I dared to throw that in the water in front of the rest. Boy, what a miserable life. But there's still a God that said, protect the sanctity of sex, because someday you're going to be married. And you can overcome with Him. But that's how we were taught, you know. And they said, you use the pro kit, then you come back and sign in the book, I had intercourse and use the pro kit. And then if you get syphilis or gonorrhea, it won't be on your record. But if you get syphilis or gonorrhea and you signed in the book and we have proof that you use the pro kit, I mean that you didn't sign in the book, you didn't use the pro kit and you get gonorrhea or syphilis, you get a dishonorable discharge. So they encouraged adultery. So I know what it's about, believe you me. But the other day for this counseling class that I'm teaching now, I thought there's one avenue I have to see for myself. And I didn't want to. And I hope you don't ever. And if you have, you know what I'm talking about. I said to Chris, I'm going to be in Chicago and I'm not going to buy a beard or sunglasses, though I'm going to feel very guilty. I'm going to go to an X-rated movie and I'm going to spend 4 minutes there. I don't want to tell you what I saw. Just one picture. How many of you have babies? Okay. That's how the scene opened. I didn't spend 4 minutes there. This so turned me off that for about 3 days I said to my wife, Chris, I'm just so turned off that I just don't want love. I was so turned off by the perversion of people, and then I'll stop. Of pictures of men and women sucking each other, rectums, vaginas, and so forth. And then on the screen, the gynecologist must have been taking the picture. Nothing on the screen but the climax of the penis and the man pulling apart the lips and so forth of the vagina. And that's what your children are seeing. Blown up. Everything. Things that we don't do. Things that make the act of love a perverted thing. It's not the thing anymore, as God said, to enter the woman and have the love and the reproduction. They don't do that. Not in these movies. Everything that's vile, everything that's in Sodom and Gomorrah is sold for $1.75. Well, I took about 3 minutes of it, and that was as much, because I know what the world's coming to, and I know the time is 11:59 as far as our ethics and our morals. But regardless of this, what I've said, the very last thing that does break a marriage, I don't even think it's the pervertedness that people are going into today, though your husband's going to have to talk about those things and he's going to have to counsel them. I think it's just basically with a lot of people, they just basically don't understand nowadays. For instance, a man doesn't understand very often, or he didn't in the past, and maybe the young man does today, maybe he does, because along with the filth of it, of course, there's a little truth. But I think the communications marriage breaks when the man doesn't understand that the woman can climax. In fact, she has multiple climaxes. And you know, a lot of women about my age never even climaxed. And I think, again, a man's got to know what this is, right? And she's got to know. And she's got to know what to expect of him. And he's got to know what to expect of her. And whenever I give my pre-marriage talks, and I included much of this, the very last thing I would always do would be basically to tell them of the great ecstasy of a perfect sex act. You know, God made this. I didn't. Couldn't have made it to be what He did. But the perfect sex act, the climaxing together of the man and the woman, so that they understand, the men, that this isn't just something I do and crawl over and crawl off. Or she thinks, well, this is part of my obedience. It seemed to be quite good, but then he was through, and I don't know, was there more or wasn't there? There's got to be a rightful Christian explanation if you don't learn it like Adam and Eve. My wife and I did, and I hope most of you did. But I know that though that's not my hang-up, it's got to be the hang-up of a lot of people in marriage, that she doesn't know, and he doesn't know. Goodness, that whole topic is, it's got to be, for some people that is, explained before it can be understood, before it can be enjoyed. But you've got to take off, in my age, was the taking off of the blinders. Because when my mother said, it's nasty and don't touch yourself, it was nasty and I wouldn't touch myself. And I guess it worked, but I know a lot of people that couldn't enjoy anything because it was still nasty. But it's not that way now. Now my children are grown outside of one. And he comes home from the high school, the kid's 14 years old, and because I have to be open. Now, I didn't have to be open with my other children too much. I was modest about it, and I didn't have to say much, and that was it. But he comes home and he tells you, I heard this joke today. I'm sitting in school. Can I tell it to you, Dad? And he looks like it's going to be too much for me. And after all I've been through, often it is. Well, man and wife, used to be, there was so little education on it that some of them just couldn't quite understand their role in the act of love. Nowadays, I think there is so much on it that it's becoming perverted. It's becoming perverted. And again, this, like everything else, is a lecture or two in itself. There is a rightful, pleasing, not gross and vile, the use of the mouth or the rectum in the act of love, as God intended it. And I think in the act of love, we do, as ministers and as Christians, have to further our knowledge so we can enjoy. And once you do have this on the right level, and I'm not even speaking of adultery now, I'm thinking of that common, good balance, healthful, that a wife and a man have to have. Once that's achieved, you've got a great communication. Now, there are many other things, too, that cause a marriage to break. They say there are three kinds of marriages. Bad, broken, and tolerable. Now, we don't agree with that. But I'm sure that we've all seen the times when our marriages were bad and when they were about ready to break and they were tolerable. We want good marriages. And you and I have to have very, very good marriages because we are the ones that help counsel those who don't. I've just taken seven basic things that break communication in marriage, or there's too much communication, which is bad because it's loud and it's angry, and then there is none at all. But I'll conclude it by saying that when you and I, when we have God, you know, when 17-year-old Bill Hauser found out, and he knew it, but he found it out when he was thrown into a war, that if they were kamikazes or submarines, and one time a submarine shot three torpedoes at us, when he found out that the worst battle was against 56 men who wanted him to live like you and I don't want to live, and when he found out that he could win through the Holy Spirit, certainly not of my size, you know, when 5'7", and I weighed then 119 pounds. That doesn't intimidate anybody, you know. So you had to win through God. You had to win through prayer. And when I saw that those victories were gained through God, then I know that when it comes to finances or in-laws or authority or pet sins or child raising or the sexual love, these things, they don't have to be the winners. With God, and built it upon His pure word, understand it, believe it, trust it, know it. Why, I just hope you're so inspired with what the word can do in your life that when you just can't wait to get out tomorrow and be a pastor's wife and help somebody in their marriage. Believe you me, I miss it. That's where we're at. If you want to give me time just to get a drink of water, I'll come back and answer your questions. And now, as women, unlike men, you'll have plenty. Might want to ask a question or two before we go home. The first question about raising children. I just discussed the unified approach, but the lady said that Luther says that a man can do more, or a woman can do more with one finger with a child than a man can do with a whole hand or both hands. That's why when at times she wants him to take the baby who's tense or something after she's breastfeeding him, or that's when she asks her husband to help her out and hold him for a little while or do something, that he just shrugs it off by saying, this is a typical man. Well, Luther says, you know, we can do more. Okay. Just in a very, very nice way, probably the best thing to do is read Luther and find out where Luther tells that husband just exactly some of the things he should do. And you know, Luther speaks very plainly, but well, have you got the time, you know, to read 90,000 volumes? But he does speak in there of the man's duty and the love. It's so vital that the little child gets to know the arms of his daddy. And it's so good for the husband, for his hands to get to know what it is to clean out a diaper. And, you know, I'm a grandfather now, and my wife, just to kid me, she has a big bottle of Vaseline around. We used to put on the little babies behind, you know, and it gets raw and red and all of that. Yeah, I said to Candy, I said, what are you putting in, the zinkers on it? Because I remember when she was a little girl, would say, run and get the zinkers. I said, you bet your dad changed diapers. You bet he put the zinkers and made your little behind a different color instead of red. And you can bet her husband, Clement, changes diapers and dumps them in the pail. And he did it before I said it because, you know, his dad and mom had something to say to him, too, about. And believe me, we're all Lutherans, and Luther has something to say about that, but I can't find it exactly. But another lady here wants to know, she said women are truthful, and that's true. Again, there's always exception, but they're truthful. Why, then, do we counsel separately? Well, you have to see an entire picture. She won't always be truthful, but generally she will be truthful, but there will be something she will hold back on. She might not say, I'm lazy, but she just won't talk about her house. If you had asked her, she would say, I'm lazy, but she's not going to talk about her house. She'll be truthful about everything, but she just won't mention something she doesn't want you to know. So you bring in the husband, and believe me, he'll be truthful about her. He won't be truthful about himself, but he'll be truthful about her house. So you have to see the whole picture from both sides, is why you counsel them alone. And then, too, she will usually get right to the source of the problem. And he won't, especially if it is his fault or if it's something he's ashamed of. And men are ashamed of not bringing home a big paycheck if he should be able to, or they're ashamed of their adultery. They're ashamed of their laziness. And if she would come right to the point in the first marriage session and say, he's lazy, he throws the stockings on the floor, well, he's just building up a barrier right away because he's thinking, why doesn't she be quiet? I don't want the preacher to know that. Another question here says, this is a good one. How do you tell your mate in the right way about a fault or a pet sin? Very carefully. No, honestly, we have to tell a husband or a wife their sins. But yes, you cannot tell them at a moment when a woman, though she has great control, really, she can go in that labor room. She can give birth and most men would pass out. She can do that. She can put up with pain. She can put up with a lot of stress. But yet, very often, the woman is very emotional. And it seems, and she can even sometimes go into an hysterics or cry, you know, like she's falling apart. She cries in an argument and becomes emotional. But really, she's got great control. She's much stronger than the man. Go to the old folks' homes. Well, you call Dr. Schmidt. He's got every statistic in the world. And I mean that as a compliment. Don't I, Carol? But you go to back up Dr. Schmidt's statistics in the old folks' home, and who's there walking the floors or in the wheelchairs? Women. You wonder where the men are. They're dead. You ladies are strong. But in a very, very nice, subdued, loving, and oh, you know how to be loving. Oh, you know how to charm us men. It's true. If a man charms a woman, he can anything he wants. She'll live in a shack. That's why some of these hippies are so successful. I was getting gas tonight and getting the car washed, and I saw a very, very attractive woman. And very, very attractive. And I wouldn't have thought that she was attractive because I don't notice the attractiveness of women. I just basically don't. My mind is on theology. I said that for the benefit of anybody who will be talking to my wife on the phone tomorrow. But I noticed, the reason I did notice that she was attractive is because he had nothing. He was one dog. He was filthy. I noticed that because when I gave him the gasoline card, I didn't even want to touch it after he did. And yet when I went around to get my car washed, she was just wilting in this fellow's arms. They were kissing and they were close to my car because they don't care what they do. Love is private and love is sacred. It doesn't belong in the screen. It doesn't belong. And the only time it belongs in words is when it's important to teach somebody or to share. It's private. It's like death. You die alone and with the Lord, and perhaps that's the way married love should be, with the wife and with the canopy of God over it. But there they were in the open, and I was just listening to his words. Boy, he was the world's greatest charmer. She didn't care what he looked like. But you do it too. You've got all the physical equipment that makes a man just melt. And when you go to him with what you are as a female, physically and mentally, and you say it very softly, none of these tears, none of this hysteria, you tell him. And maybe you tell him when you pray, and then you don't say it again. That's all. And he does that to you too. You know, I'm listening to that sermon today, or I'm preaching this, and boy, I've got a lot of faults, and I know what they are, and I better tell him. That I say, you know, Chris, I would appreciate it if you would remember this. That's the right way, in love, and softly. And carefully, but truthfully. And don't pile it on. Just mention it. I don't like to say it, but I think you did flirt the other night. That's enough. Ooh, that would hurt me. That's one thing I never had any problem with, because I knew as a pastor, you keep women like this. Oh, we're friendly and we get along. But you keep them right like that. Because you have to. You trust me, but you trust me because you know that the last thing I would want to do is commit adultery with anybody here. And you know that because you're intuitive and you're right. And your husband's got to know that too. But if you do have a husband who doesn't keep them this way and shines around them, I was looking at who was here all, and so I can truthfully say that two or three men in this seminary, and I must see them, I hate to. I always hated to do this with my members. This, tell them truthfully their sin. But there's two or three men that I have to see. Because every time they come and talk to my secretary, and as I say, I've looked at everybody here, I've learned to do that in the church. Watch them in the door, watch them in the pulpit. And then I knew if there was one thing in there that was for that particular person, I would change the whole sermon. It's hard work, but you can do it. And that's what I did here when I came in and out two or three times. That's why I'm going to say there are two or three men that when they come and talk to my secretary, and Mueller's secretary, and Agel's secretary, oh boy, do they flirt. And I know it's innocent. Oh boy, are they going to make a mistake in the parish? They really are. Okay. I've got to go to them, and I've got to tell them in a nice way. Not too much, not too heavy, but it will be said. And just like I told you, here's how I'm going to do it. I say, you know, I asked to see you, and I know you don't. I'll be back at my desk, you know. Now. I'll say, I sure, and this is how you do it to your wife or your husband. Truthfully, but you do it gently. I listened to you, and you were flirting with Judy. And if that's the kind of a preacher you're going to be, forget it. No. That's the truth. I sure hesitated to call you in. We'll say Jerry Brown. I just heard his name on the election recently, so we'll say this guy. Okay, so it's Jerry Carter or whatever. I really hate to call you in because I may be wrong. And I don't want to offend the relationship that we have as people. But for your own good, think about it, and if I'm wrong, then forget it. But if there's anything right in what I say to you, pray on it, and we'll never discuss it again. But you're going to be a pastor, and it's a very, very difficult and wonderful thing to be. And you deal with the lambs and the sheep, the little kids and the old ones and the middle-aged ones, but you deal with someone who's the opposite of you, and that's women.
And you can't go into any congregation with the kind of a freedom, the levity. It almost sounds like a little bit of flirting, though. I know you don't mean it, and I'm sure that Judy doesn't think it's that way, but be so careful. Because maybe your eyes say something to a woman in the church that they don't say, and she thinks so. And your wife would see this, or some member in your church. You see, it's probably nothing. But think about it. That's how you got to say it to your husband or your wife.
In truth. And you know, there's just a chance that maybe you are wrong. But I doubt it. All right, time for a few questions before we go home. If you have any.
How do you create time for good communication?
Yeah. Let me tell you what I did with my boys and girls. And then my wife. A parish pastor is busy. The trouble is that sometimes he says it to his people and they think he's just saying it. And then he brags about it and then they think, well, he's really not as busy. He just wants us to think he is. So you never have to tell your people you're busy. You are, and they'll know it. My children knew it. Now you raise five, you know, 27 or 28 year old son down to 14, and you don't have the time. And without both a mother and a father's love and attention and time, no good. I'm counseling now a boy somehow around here somewhere who worships the devil. Missouri Synod Lutheran parents. I've tried to find the problem and I know what it is, but let's say it's this one, that the dad doesn't have the time. My children were told, you know, this is where I'm at and this is what I do and I do this for the church and it's important to do this for God, but of course you're very, very important to me. Now, they need me. And so do you. But when you have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1,000 and above members, you can only give each in that church a little time. And with emergencies, that takes a lot of your time. So I would always try to have what I called when they were little, a family night, the day off. Try to religiously take a day off and have a family night. And if you don't have much money, you don't need it. Do something. Go for a ride. The other night I felt so guilty. Yeah, that's me. Felt so guilty when my boy said, Dad, let's go for a ride. We never do anymore. Well, my excuse was, well, what's there to see in Springfield as compared to Seattle, you know? That's bad, because there's a lot to see here. There is. But the point is, we went for a ride, and when we came home, my wife said, gee, thanks so much, Bill. It was such a nice evening. Oh, it just killed me. It just killed me because I realized how much time I've been giving here and too little to them. Now they're getting their time. But as a parish pastor to her, but now to the children, I said we're going to have a family night, and we had it. Now if the phone rang and it was an emergency, okay. But it got so busy when I was in Seattle that when I couldn't take the time, and you can't turn down going to see a patient who's got cancer because you have to take that time for your family. No, you go and you go to that cancer patient and you bury the dead and you baptize and you give your life for those people, but you find the time for your family and you will. Every day, I made this one time for my family, and then there was often more, but every day I climbed out of that sack when I didn't have to and I took those kids to high school. I got up and I ate breakfast with them and we talked, and there was no carrying a radio around. That when I got out of the bathroom and I started shaving, I put the radio down. We talked. We got in that car, and we would ride the 3 or 4 miles, and we would talk. Now, maybe sometimes that was all, but every day, at least 10 or 15 minutes, they knew Dad cared enough to get out of that bed when he was tired, because that was the time he had his communication, and that was love, and that was trust. And that goes for your wife. Now, there are other times, too, with my children, but just quickly to answer, no, my wife. Because I read, because I study, because I write, because I counsel, and all these things as a parish minister, I always had an office to go to and shut the door. Or, you know, you have to preach. You've got to do these things. You've got to study all your life. So I did. But in the first few years of our marriage, I knew something was happening. You know, you counsel everybody else. You get perceptive about people. It's about time you get perceptive about your wife, that there's something happening. And then I knew. I just wasn't giving her any time. You know, 7 o'clock, I was talking to the kids, not her, for breakfast, and taking them to school. And then I would come home. No, I'd go to work. So, again, I truthfully said, what are we going to do? And she says, well, we can find days and we can take ferry rides across the Sound and we can observe anniversaries and the Lord will give us time and we'll try to take Mondays off. But she said, until these things are established, she said, you know, women are smart. She says, why don't you talk to me? Just take a few minutes in between a call or stop off and we'll just talk. I said, you mean, and I was just kidding, you know, I said, you mean chitter chatter? And she said, yes, seriously, chitter chatter. I said, you know, I'm smart young preacher. Oh, you mean you want me to just talk to you like you talk to ladies? And she said, yes, just talk to me. I said, you mean over babe? Then I knew she was serious. You mean like babies and diapers and cooking and ceramics and curtains? She said, yes, just talk to me about curtains and ceramics. I don't know what I did, ladies, for a few days. But if you would say to my wife now, what really made the marriage strong outside of God and all of this that's right and wrong and love and honor and cherish, you know what she would say? Because my husband found time to chit-chat with me every day. And to do that, she said, the best time is over coffee. I said, do you know that I did not touch one cup of coffee in the Navy? I never drank coffee. I started drinking coffee. I gave up a lot. I started drinking coffee because it was the only, and she loved coffee. It was the only time that I would sit down. You know, if you know Deutsch, German, ich habe kein Sitzfleisch. That in English means I don't have any, I don't like to sit down. I got flesh, we all have flesh to sit on, but I don't like to sit down, I like to move around. Well, I learned to sit down and drink coffee and chit-chat. It's wonderful. So you want to talk about ceramics sometime? Curtain, David? It's all right. But she knew that if I was going to enter her world and things I really didn't care about, that she'd better enter mine. Some women like baseball and football, she can't stand it. She can't stand sports. But during this chit-chat, she knew it had to be both. So if we have coffee tomorrow at 7 o'clock, because I don't have to take the kids to school anymore, it's just one home and it's summertime, she'll say, how did the Cubs do? Now, I know she really doesn't care at all. But that's the game we play because I tell her. And then she'll say, and she's a national ceramics teacher. I'll brag a little. She won second prize in the nation for her ceramic that she made. And though I still don't care about ceramics, she knows that. But I'll say, what are you making today? What colors? Is it going to be glaze or... That answers your question?